And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I'm GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys back to our first episode of August again. As we're recording this here early on a, what is it, Wednesday night, Luke?
It is a Wednesday evening.
Yes, yeah, so precursor number one, this is before the PJ Fleck show airs, or episode one of it. So we don't know what it's going to be. What it's going to be like, but it's going to be interesting. And we're only 2 days away until I finally get taken a fall camp practice, which I will come back next week and report to each and every one of you loyal listeners about. But Luke, I know you were stuck on Broadway for a while, and considering I was there as well, how was your little Broadway experience tonight?
The traffic's been better, and it actually was an accident where somebody was taking a left onto Johnson Street to head south down to Hennepin, I'm sure, and they went a little bit too wide and actually hit the bridge.
That's not ideal. That is not optimal.
That gobbled up an entire eastbound lane on Broadway as I was trying to head home to record a conversation with you. So, yeah, not the best commute I've ever had, but we made it nonetheless.
Well, hopefully people are sitting they're probably driving into work tomorrow morning listening to us. So Luke, let's dive into it. We got a lot of information to get through.
So there's a handful of things that I really need to know, Mr. Burns. And one is, what the heck is hyper, and what the heck is a hyper hangout?
I would screw up the acronym. I don't have it in front of me. It's what the hyper hangout was, is it was a little barbecue get together for all the different kind of commits that were coming in, including a lot of top targets. I mean, you look at last weekend and basically just the last 7 days. I know that we didn't record last week, and I think I saw at least 10, 15 tweets my way. So my bad. Luke and I just couldn't find time to get something out to preview the barbecue. But there's been like 6, 7 commits. I know there were 5 last weekend that basically took up my Saturday night. So everybody who had Saturday night plans last week, I'm jealous of you, because I was sitting in front of my laptop typing all the stories that I could for our GopherIllustrated.com members, trying to make sure they got the best content they could. But all it was a barbecue and a hangout sort of things. How it started was they had a bunch of golf carts there. I think there was, from walking through the facility, there was like 25 golf carts there. And they had each one of the top targets or commits, they had them do like a scavenger hunt kind of a thing around campus, try for them to get down the campus, do a bunch of different activities. And finally they figured it out, or ended it anyway, with some food. So that was basically the hyper hangout, and it resulted in, I believe, from Thursday on, I think there were 6 commitments. So, I mean, we got a lot to talk about in terms of what this 2018 recruiting class is looking like.
Basically, the only thing I take away from that description of a hyper hangout is I learned that you're not changing your best every day, because you don't actually know what hyper is. And I know that I'm not changing my best. So, let's get into the actual recruiting. I don't know. Is there an order you'd like to go in?
Let's start with the SEC transfers.
Okay. Transfers. I like that. Defensive line and cornerback.
Yeah, I mean, news since we last spoke on this podcast came out that Minnesota was pursuing a couple of SEC transfers, and they actually got both of them done. So the first one we'll talk about was the first one done, and that was O.J. Smith, a defensive tackle from the University of Alabama. And I know I've spoken about this with Paul Allen on KFAN. I've talked about this religiously on Gopher Illustrated's message boards as well. But if you're going to be getting a defensive line transfer from anywhere in college football ranks, I think Alabama is about the best place you can do it, considering they turn out, it seems like, 2 or 3 NFL defensive tackles each and every year. And so what the story is with Mr. O.J. Smith is he was getting to be an upperclassman. He's going into his redshirt junior season, and he found out that he wasn't going to be receiving the amount of playing time that he wanted to get. Again, this is a kid with a fantastic pedigree. Obviously, he was a University of Alabama player. He was an Under Armour All-American. So this kid's nothing to really turn your head at. And so he puts on Twitter, hey, I'm transferring out. Minnesota reaches out. They get him on an official visit. I believe last Thursday it was, or Tuesday or Thursday. I forget what the actual date was. But he was scheduled to go visit Kansas State after Minnesota. So Minnesota gets him on campus. They hadn't offered at that point. Got to know he and his family. And they ended up getting a Thursday commitment from him, which is huge. Obviously, he doesn't go to Kansas State. And now, as we sit here Wednesday night, he's actually enrolled as of yesterday. So he's going to be here, or he's already here, and he's going to be participating in fall camp. So that's huge. The other thing to know is he's going to have to sit out this 2017 season, but he's going to be eligible in 2018 for only one season. But again, that's huge because Minnesota doesn't really want to burn a lot of red shirts in terms of even this year. They don't want to burn red shirts. So Minnesota needs defensive tackle depth. They got that in O.J. Smith. Now, when you look at the other SEC transfer, they got a Florida defensive back by the name of Chris Williamson. Again, same situation goes. You look at the different cornerbacks, the different secondaries across college football. I believe Florida has turned out about as many defensive backs as Minnesota has in recent years, and that's a good thing. So he got to be an upperclassman. He figured out that he wasn't going to be playing as much, put it out on social media that he's transferring out. And the connection there is two things, two guys, defensive back coach Mo Lindquist and GM Garrett Chernoff. Both of them were at Iowa State when Williamson was being recruited. They were actually the first staff to offer him. So again, they knew him well. They reached out to him, said, hey, look at our cornerback depth chart. We legit don't have anything that's really proven, so you can come in and play. So they got him up on an official visit over the weekend. He was here with his father and mother, father, I forget off the top of my head here. Ended up getting him committed. He is going to be enrolled here by the end of the week. He has a class to finish up in Florida, so he should be here the second week of camp. And again, that's fine because he is ineligible in 2017, but he has 2 years to play in 2018 and 2019. So again, O.J. Smith and Chris Williamson are going to be eligible starting in the spring. So you, even if you come out to one of the fall camp practices, there's a pretty good chance that you're going to be able to take them in. But two transfers from SEC schools at positions of need, PJ is going out and getting the guys he knows that he needs to bring in depth, if not starting kind of guys, for 2018.
All right. So then additionally, I think you said, were there five total commitments in addition to the transfers, or were there three? I'm not sure I know.
So it actually is five total with the SEC transfers. I think off the top of my head, I hope I'm not screwing that up. But on top of the SEC transfers they got three committed as well, high school players. And the first one we'll talk about is Nolan Edmonds, and he's actually a recommitment. So the story goes, Nolan took a visit to the University of Michigan State or Michigan State University, and he didn't exactly alert the staff to that. And when the staff was alerted that he was there, they had a quick phone conversation, and it was deemed best for both sides to kind of take a break, make sure that Edmonds is all about the word commitment. And so he took that visit to Michigan State, ended up taking another visit to Louisville, and then he took a visit to Minnesota last weekend with his mom. So he ended up telling the staff, hey, this is where I want to be. I've seen other places. I'm 100% sure of my commitment now. So they get to pair Nolan Edmonds now with the Shannon Brooks clone, who is Bryce Williams. So Minnesota's through the roof about that. Again, anytime you get a running back over Michigan State and Louisville, I think you're doing pretty good amongst others. The second commitment we can touch on here, actually, there's actually more than I'm thinking off the top of my head now. There may be five high school players. Or is it four? We'll get to it. So first, we'll talk about Grant Norton, someone I was able to see at camp Saturday morning, someone I've seen at camp twice in the last month here at Minnesota. He's all of 6'8", 255 pounds. Again, a big, big athletic guy, someone who runs under five flat, someone who's got a 9-plus broad jump. So again, this is a kid that's got a lot of a weight to put on his frame. But the thing you need to know about Grant is probably about 6 months ago, he was probably 230 pounds. He's already up to 255. And also, if you were able to meet his father, he looks like a Arnold Schwarzenegger clone in terms of when Arnold Schwarzenegger was actually lifting. So there is no issues in terms of me thinking, well, is Norton actually going to get in the weight room? I can see, and I've talked to his father a couple of times now, there's going to be no issues there. So anytime you can get a 6'8" guy who is extremely athletic the way Norton is, that Minnesota thought that was too much to pass up. So they extended an offer. He committed immediately over schools such as Central Florida, Purdue, amongst others there. And again, it surprises me. And I was talking with Midwest recruiting analyst Alan True about it. We were both shocked that after seeing his camp performance that he didn't have at least four or five more BCS options, knowing how limited the BCS tackle pool is this year. So Minnesota's thrilled to have Grant Norton. And then they also got another tackle commitment, an actual flip from San Diego State commit Jack York. So the story with York goes, he commits to San Diego State a few weeks ago, and Minnesota's like, hey, you know, we'd still love you to come up here. We want to see what you're like in person because we really like you on tape. They're like, hey, can you come camp? And he says, well, I told San Diego State I wasn't actually going to camp, but I can visit since I didn't tell them I was going to do that. So welcome to the recruiting loopholes of 2017. So I was standing there next to York and his father as he was up there. Again, a kid all of 6 foot five, 270 pounds there. Minnesota made the decision that he was the best fit for them for that second tackle spot there. They extended an offer and got him flipped. So Minnesota got their bookend tackles there. And then finally, we'll talk about Braylon Oliver, someone that I know that this staff really, really wanted coming into the weekend. He was arguably probably their top priority. Someone that is all of 6 foot, 215 pounds. And I guess a player he kind of reminds me of is Jonathan Celestine, even though I think John's a little bit bigger. But Oliver's a little bit faster. He's someone that shows Minnesota over places such as Wake Forest, where Jay Sawville is right now, West Virginia and Indiana, amongst others. So, again, a kid who can run extremely well, someone who's got a lot of speed to him, and he's not afraid to come downhill, I can assure you of that. So they pair him at outside linebacker with Mariano Sorry-Marin. And I am so bad at the commitments names right now because I'm just so out of it right now. And Thomas Rush. So you have Rush and you have Oliver at your outside linebacker spots. You have Mariano Sorry-Marin as your Mike linebacker. Josh Ani from Highland Park, I think, is going to eventually move to outside linebacker, but he is slotted at safety, but I have a hard time believing he doesn't put on 10 pounds to become a linebacker. So as we sit here tonight, Luke, that's six commitments we've talked about in the last 7 days. And so Minnesota's at 23 commitments. And as far as what do they want next, I know that for a fact, I've been talking about it a lot the last 48 hours on Gopher Illustrated, but I don't anticipate them really getting past maybe one or two more as of right now from the sources I've talked with within the program, because Williamson and Smith count against the 18 class. So again, technically they're at 25 right now, and they're going to try to get maybe one or two more, but they need to have some guys transfer for that to happen. So they're extremely ecstatic to be where they're at, 23 commitments. They're top 30 class right now. And so it's been hot and heavy on Gopher Illustrated with the amount of commitments, and I can assure you of that.
Okay, so is the strategy now, you know, this was kind of the Jerry Kill calling card, that is once you get them committed, that's when the real recruiting starts. So is that basically kind of the next, let's say,
absolutely,
4 or 5 months? I mean, until February?
Well, until December. And that's going to be the interesting part about it.
December, and that's new.
Yeah, it is. And I forget where I saw it on social media, and I feel bad about it because, again, I want to give credit where credit's due, but someone put that I believe Minnesota had 3 or 4 commitments this time last year heading into fall camp. Now Minnesota has 23.
Wow.
So it's a little bit of a change. And again, that's what you're going to see with PJ Fleck. He wants to have his recruiting classes sewn up by fall camp, so he's able to focus on the season. All the coaches are able to focus on the season. And then once the season's over, they don't have to worry about filling spots. So, again, it's a stark change from what the old staff was, but now the actual recruiting begins. Again, you have to keep them committed to make sure they sign in December, and if they don't sign in December, I'm going to need a good reason why they didn't, or else I'm going to remove them from Minnesota's commitment list. So now the real recruiting starts, but again, everybody wanted it to be done before all the high school fall camps begin, as a, you know, each one of these kids wants to go out and win a state championship for their senior season, and Minnesota wants to focus on year one. So everybody's happy all around.
Yeah, you know, I wish there was like this person that wrote articles and could look at, you know, the differences between, you know, the Kill era and this era, and how many guys had to take an official visit in the Kill era and how many guys committed before an official visit.
I wish someone would talk about that.
I wish somebody would do something like that, because, you know, there's stark differences in the recruiting approach here.
Or maybe then they could write a story about the Georgia pipeline that Minnesota has now, considering they had 5 players on the roster that attended high schools in Georgia. Now they have 5 commitments from the University of Georgia, or it's not the University of Georgia, from Georgia high schools. I wish somebody would write an article about that. That's for free if you want to go read it on gopherillustrated.com right now.
Oh, really? I might have to go to GopherIllustrated.com. Okay, I might check that out.
I love our shameless plugs, and I hope people are shaking their heads and rolling their eyes, because that was 100% the main objective there.
Yeah, well, and it wasn't planned either. That was the thing. Okay, let's actually chat a little bit more about fall camp, because, I mean, more or less, it's weird to say, but recruiting, in essence, you know, you kind of know who your class is, and now you're just fighting for them. So let's talk this 2017 season. Okay. There are a lot of question marks. We've talked about that all over the last two podcasts. And, you know, a lot of people actually hitting you up and myself up talking just about why so negative. And I want to preface this with saying, I don't think that I'm negative. I think I just knew the last two seasons, I felt like we had more known quantities. And now I just feel like we have a lot more gaping holes. And we've talked about that at length, but I just don't know what to expect. I still have some positivity thinking that if things go well, we could actually win quite a few ball games. But right now there's just too many unknowns for me to be optimistic.
And I guess that's the first thing we should probably address. And I remember seeing the reaction on Twitter, seeing the reaction on the GopherIllustrated.com message boards. Folks, I mean, we were just being honest. We were being frank with our defensive breakdown. And that's just, there's a lot of question marks that we need answered. And again, and this entire time I have prefaced this with the actual prediction that I still think Minnesota is going to win 7 regular season games. They won 8 last year. It's just the way that they're going to get to that 7 is going to be a lot different in my eyes than it has been the two previous seasons.
Well, let's not forget too that it's kind of exacerbated because you've really never actually seen, you know, these guys go live because of the spring injuries.
Exactly. So there's just a lot of question marks we need answered. And then again, that's what we're going to get into here tonight is what are our fall camp storylines? And I guess let's start with offense, Luke. And again, we've talked about this at length for it seems like 7 months now because there's no Mitch Leidner. So who is it? Is it Connor Rota or is it Demery Croft? And I just have an extremely hard time believing it's not Demery Croft unless something happens. Unless Demery comes out during fall camp and just shows no progress from the spring. He's starting to take steps back because, and again, we've talked about this. There's just so many things that Demery does well and his ceiling is so much higher. I mean, number one, he's younger than Connor Rota, which again, if you are anywhere near the same kind of tier in terms of a quarterback play, in my eyes, you always go with the younger one because he has the ceiling theoretically to grow more. Two, I think there's so much more in terms of arm talent than there are just throws that Demery can make because of his arm that Connor can't. And three, in my eyes, at least during the spring, again, it was everybody's first taste of what a Kirk Ciarrocca offense was going to be. And Demery handled that better than Connor. He made better reads, took care of the ball better. And again, from someone who was sitting in the Gopher football team room for media day, in big bold letters across the center of the room, it says the ball is the program. What does that mean? That means you take care of the ball in offense and you get the ball in defense. And if you do not take care of the ball, and Luke, you and I have touched on this, why did Western Michigan go 13-0 in the regular season last year?
Yeah.
Well, that number one plus minus in all of FBS football really plays a part. So again, if Connor's not going to take care of the ball, he can't take, again, I just think Connor Rota is a game manager. We've talked about his one start against Maryland where he was like 8-16 for 100 yards and a touchdown and an interception. To me, that's exactly what you're going to be getting and where Demery has the ceiling to elevate a passing game. So that's going to be probably the biggest hot button topic because, again, if you don't have a quarterback, you're not going to win many games. And you saw that about last season is if Minnesota had decent quarterback play at times, they would have won double-digit games. So
yeah,
I don't know. I still think it's unless Demery gets hurt. I mean,
can I be completely honest with you? I'm not all that concerned about who's going to play quarterback because at this point, like they're both going to play at some point. When's the last time a quarterback went wire to wire since Adam Weber? I can't think of one that followed Adam Weber.
That's a great point too.
It's very unlikely.
If Demery has to miss a game, well, Connor's going to play anyway. So everybody on the Connor Rota bandwagon is going to get his chance to shine. And again, that's a great point, especially since they are going to be using a little bit of running in that system. So again, I think Demery can hold up during the length of a season, but if Mitch Leidner, who's probably the toughest SOB that came through this program in the last 5 years, considering the amount of injuries he played through, I don't know how Demery's not going to miss at least a series or a quarter or a half or a game at least. So again, the question mark is going to be who's behind them. And again, I have no idea how it wouldn't be Tanner Morgan at this point, because I think he's much farther. I shouldn't say much farther. I think he's farther along than what Seth Green is still. So, but again, quarterback play is going to be a huge hot button topic and something I'll be watching here Friday and Saturday and going into next Tuesday as well.
Okay. So I think the next kind of fall storyline has to be wide receiver, right? You know, you kind of know what you have in Still and Johnson, and then after that, you really have no idea. And you know, and neither Still or Johnson are 100% proven commodities, but they seem to be, you know, at least the two that kind of stand out. But after that, you just really have no idea, right? So, I guess if you had to take a stab in the dark, who's going to be number three and four?
That's a great question, and that's one I posed to a few different staff members when I was on campus. Over the weekend, is I know you have Tyler Johnson. I know you have Rashad Still. Who the heck is your wide receiver three? And my answer from the three different sources I asked there was, your guess is as good as Mars. We don't know. The consensus among them is who's going to start there is going to be Eric Carter going into, I believe it's going to be his redshirt senior season here. But there's a lot of optimism around Demetrius Douglas, number one, Omar Douglas' son. For those of you who remember Omar playing back in the day, I do believe he holds the single-game touchdown record for 5 touchdowns in a game in a Golden Gopher uniform. And then Chris Bell as well. So that's great, but that's only 3 names, considering that there's usually like a 5-man wide receiver rotation. Our point here is it is extremely up for grabs. Minnesota going into fall camp, which started yesterday, couldn't tell you who's going to be that wide receiver three. So again, does Eric Carter finally step up as a redshirt senior and really take a hold of it? Is it Demetrius Douglas? Is it Chris Bell as true freshman earning reps? Does Melvin Holland and Isaiah Gentry come back from the dead? Again, clean slate for both. If they're both healthy, you are never going to be getting as easy of a path to playing time as you are right now. Legitimately, folks, I don't know who the third wide receiver is going to be. Now, if I was a betting man, which I am, I like to put some money down from time to time on some different kind of sporting events, I would bargain that I think probably Chris Bell or Demetrius Douglas ends up there. Now, can Melvin Holland assert a role there? Absolutely. I'm much more optimistic on his odds than Isaiah Gentry's, because I think that his hamstring injuries over the last couple of years have deterred his burst that what it once was isn't what it is now. But, you know, Eric Carter has had plenty of time to assert himself as that wide receiver three. It just hasn't happened. So I'm thinking Chris Bell and Demetrius Douglas come in and play a big role. But again, that's another storyline. Or is it one of the walk-ons that come in and grab some playing time? Maybe it's Hunter Register going into his redshirt sophomore season. Drew Himmelski. Again, I don't know how it's going to play out, and neither does the Gopher sources that I have. So it's, again, a huge topic we have to watch here over the next 2 weeks.
All right. So if you're looking at other storylines on offense, I mean, running back's really not one. I kind of venture to think that tight end really isn't one. But offensive line, I think that definitely could be a storyline that we want to watch more so from a depth perspective, right? Like, my assumption is that we kind of have a stable of who we think should start. And then after that, but you know, we got to identify who's going to be that swing tackle, who's going to be that swing guard, et cetera.
And I think it's even more than that. It's Ed Warner has to figure out what his combination is going to be. Considering you look at the offensive line from the spring, he didn't have Jared Weiler. He didn't have Vincent Calhoun. He didn't have Garrison Wright. He didn't have Ben Davis. I mean, he didn't have all these players, all these scholarship players. Calhoun, Wright, and Weiler all started games for Minnesota last year. They started a lot of games, and they just don't know how they're going to be able to fit this group and have them come together. And that's probably maybe the biggest job that has to be done with this offense is how do you figure out where you're going to be? Because even Jaron Weiler talked about it at Media Day during the week here. He doesn't know if he's going to be a center or guard yet. And again, and that's fair that's a fair assumption, and that's a fair point by the Minnesota coaching staff telling him that is they've never seen him play. I mean, they can see what he's done on tape. They know he's a good player. But how does he – is he going to work in at center, or is it going to be Connor Olsen? Is he going to work in guard? If so, where does Vincent Calhoun go? You know, where? How do all these different pieces of the pie come together? I mean, that's going to be a huge talking point. So, I mean, that's probably the biggest thing is how does this offensive line group gel? And who is at what positions? Because Donnell Green, I think, is going to be a tackle somewhere. Now, is Garrison Wright going to be at right tackle, or is it going to be Nick Conley? If it's Nick Conley, is it Garrison Wright and Calhoun as your guards? If so, where does that leave Jared Weiler and Connor Olsen? Because I think Connor Olsen is probably deserving of playing time sooner rather than later. There's, if we don't know about the unknowns of wide receiver three, welcome to the unknowns of the offensive line. Because, again, anybody telling you they know how they're going to project out this offensive line right now, they're telling you a bunch of hogwash. Minnesota doesn't even know. I can assure you of that. So, again, how does this offensive line come together? What positions? Now, if I'm going to take a stab at it, my guess would be Donald Green at left tackle. I think Garrison Wright probably slides in at right. You have Calhoun and probably Connor Olsen at guards. And then, again, you put in Jared Weiler at center and let him figure it out from there. But, again, there's a lot of unknowns there, and even at tight end to an extent, because how's Colton Beebe going to react coming off injury? How's Brandon Lingan going to react coming off injury? Can Bryce Witham stay healthy? Where does Jake Paulson have a role? Again, all a bunch of question marks that I'm excited to have answered here over the next week.
All right, so I think that we can kind of forego at least the kicking aspect of the specialist. We know what we have at place kicker. We probably know what we have at punter. And even kickoffs, really, right? So let's talk a little bit of defense instead, and just bypass the kicking specialists. We have a known commodity at defensive line at defensive tackle. I have to be very clear the difference between defensive line, defensive tackle, and defensive end. We know we have in defensive tackle, but the question mark is defensive end, right? And I think what we're seeing is an approach of trying to use a very deep linebacker core and trying to get some of those guys to fill some of those roles. So I guess my question to you, Ryan, is, you know, how do you see this playing out, especially these defensive end roles?
It's a great question because, again, I feel great about where Minnesota's at defensive tackle rise right now. They're going to have at least five upperclassmen at defensive tackle. But again, we've harped on this for a while now, Luke, and that's how does Minnesota figure out defensive end? Even between Winston, Dilady, Boudair, and who else they threw out there, I mean, these guys are only 240, 250, 260 pounds. That's not going to go well against these power running teams like Wisconsin, like Iowa. How does Minnesota figure out how to stop the run? Because that's something, again, that's why we were all Johnny Raincloud on the last episode, was how do they figure it out? Because, again, they're going to try to use guys like Teyon Devers, Carter Coughlin, Blake Cashman. I'm sure Kamal Martin will get some reps there. Again, that's great. But these guys are only 240 pounds, and when you put them against a tight end or an offensive tackle, you know, the tackle say he's around 300 pounds, the tight end say he's around 270, you're losing. You're going to be losing that battle more times than not. Again, it's great in pass rushing situations. I really don't have any issues, or I have no question marks about the pass rushing, because Minnesota has plenty of pass rushers on the outside with their linebacking core, but how do they figure it out on the inside? Now, it is that Jalen Waters moving to defensive end because he's probably north of 255 pounds. I don't know, and that's something that we're going to have to monitor here throughout fall camp, because that is going to be a storyline throughout the season, is because Minnesota was left with no defensive ends. And that's a Jeff Phelps, that's a Tracy Clay's deal, is they didn't recruit well there, and so they missed, and then they didn't fill it. So that's something that PJ is trying to fill here. And that's where you're stuck here. And maybe they're going to have to burn some red shirts. But guys like, by the way, I did see Hopkins Boye Mafe over the weekend. I swear to God, he's grown another inch, because he's an inch taller than me and I'm 6'4". And he looks all of about 245 pounds. He looks like $1 million. So are they going to have to burn red shirts there? Are they going to have to burn red shirts for Boye Mafe, Nate Umlor, Malcolm Robinson, Noah Hickox? Are they going to have to burn red shirts to just have bodies that are north of 260 pounds at end? Again, another thing we're going to have to watch here throughout fall camp.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about the secondary. That's another question mark. You know, we're pretty solid at linebacker. A lot of depth there, a lot of experience, a lot of young talent as well, intermixed with that. But secondary, It's well documented that, you know, the Gophers lost a lot of good players due to expulsion, due to a graduation, a couple in the NFL, etc. This feels like we're kind of, like you said, we're beating a dead horse, but, you know, this is another big question mark, is especially that cornerback position.
That's probably, it's up there with defensive end question marks. And again, I mean, we don't mean to sound like Debbie Downer's folks. It's just things that we have to have addressed. And that's especially a cornerback, because Antonio Chanot is the only one who just started games at cornerback for Minnesota right now. Kunle Ayinde, I mean, if you want to count him as a cornerback, I mean, he's going to play nickel or probably safety. I don't think that corner is the best spot for him personally. But again, Zoe Creighton has played two quarters. Coney Durr has played a half in a bowl game. And Keandre Thomas redshirted last year. So while, again, that's what Luke's point was here early in the podcast, is we just don't have a lot of proven commodities. Now, is Keandre Thomas, Coney Durr, amongst others, talented? Absolutely. I mean, that's why Jay Sovell brought them in. Jay Sovell being the defensive back whisperer that he was in terms of getting guys in the NFL, knows how to develop talent. And those were two guys that he wanted extremely badly. Again, they're just young. So Coney is now cleared for fall camp. He should be being worked in here. Keandre Thomas, I'm expecting to start there alongside of Antonio Chanot. And then how do true freshmen such as Justice Harris, Ray Estes, Kendarian Handy Holly, Josh Beck, where do they fit in? Again, it's something that we're going to have to watch. My guess, when I go and see, when I go and watch practice on Friday, your starting corners are, they're going to be Antonio Chanot and they're going to be Keandre Thomas. Antoine Winfield is going to be a nickel. And then your two safeties are Dale Tavius, McGee, and Jacob Huff. Now, the number two cornerbacks and the number two safeties is what I'm really going to be watching to see who's making moves there. Because, again, all it takes is one injury and you have a true freshman on the field, especially in this defensive back core this year. But, again, there's talent there. I have no doubts about that, especially after this 2018 recruiting class signs between Benny Sapp, who – I'll say this. I was talking with an Eden Prairie coach over the weekend. He was at Minnesota's camp. And I asked him, what do you think of Benny Sapp? And he goes, I've been coaching there 20-plus years, and Benny is the most talented defensive back I've ever seen. And I'm like, wow. I mean, that's something that, again, for a kid coming off two ACL injuries should make you very excited as a Gopher fan. Then you also have three other defensive backs to pair with him. Again, the talent is going to be there. It's just going to take a little bit of time. So 2017, there's going to be probably some times where Minnesota's going to look very young out there, and they will, and they're going to take their lumps. But again, I think there's talent there. It just needs to prove itself. And that's something we'll be watching here at Gopher Illustrated come fall camp.
So I don't really have any other fall camp storylines to cover. Do you?
I mean, we're just trying to figure out what a Kirk Soraka offense is going to look like. You know, year one in the offense, year one in the defense. Again, what kind of way does Minnesota go? Because I think people even around the building will tell you this because they've told me it. And that's that in the past couple of years, the defense has had to carry the offense at times, and that's how Minnesota's won games. I don't think they're going to be able to do that as much this year because of their secondary and because of their defensive end issues. And Minnesota knows that, and they know that they have to expect more from their offense because the offense is going to have to score more points because I think the defense is going to be giving up some more. So again, how does the offense adjust to the role as maybe they're the dominant ones now? Because the defense is known, they're the ones that win games for Minnesota. So how does it transition the other way? Again, that's another thing I'm going to be watching. What does a Rob Smith defense look like with the personnel he has? There's a lot of question marks, a lot of question marks. But again, that's the fun of fall camp. It's finally here. We get to talk about next week when we're back here on the podcast. I get to talk about actual live football, as by that time I'll have seen three practices already. So who's asserting themselves? What camp battles are really heating up? I mean, that's the beauty of it. And the best part about it is, folks, I don't know if you've heard of this, but Gopher Illustrated is probably the place to be. Again, you get, I believe it's a 7-day free trial right now between Ryan James and myself. I have a hard time believing you're finding any kind of better Gopher football coverage out there. Again, I have thousands of words in terms of practice reports coming, in terms of photos coming, video coming. All the benefits of being a GopherIllustrated.com member. So if you want to hear about what fall camp is looking like before next week's podcast, get it fresh and get it first on Gopher Illustrated.
All right, Ryan, let's close with this. We have a couple documentary type shows They're going to feature, probably largely feature the University of Minnesota. One being PJ Fleck, and the other one will be, it's totally escaping me now, but
Last Chance U,
which documents basically a junior college season. So let's actually start with the Last Chance U. So they're going to be following a community college called Independence Community College. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's going to be a change from what I believe is some Mississippi one.
East Mississippi Community College.
And again, why Luke brings it up is Independence Community College in Kansas is where the three Minnesota expelled defensive backs are at now. So if you don't think that they're going to be talking with Ray Buford, Dior Johnson, and Tamarian Johnson about what happened at Minnesota, you are going to be sorely mistaken.
Yes, I was going to say, so if you actually watch Last Chance U, they focus pretty almost basically an entire episode on DeAndre Johnson, who is the individual or the quarterback that went to Florida State that ended up punching a gal that got caught on tape. And he was kicked off the team, and that's how he ended up at East Mississippi Community College. So
exactly.
This is a storyline like they're hunting out.
Yeah, don't be surprised when you see it. That's my entire point to this is don't be surprised if there's an episode or two on the Minnesota case, because again, that's probably one of the reasons why they chose Independence. And another Minnesota connection there is Jermaine Johnson. He is an Eden Prairie defensive end that ended up going JUCO because of grades. And so I'm curious to see how much they highlight him, because I think he's going to have a big season down there. So again, it's something we have to talk about, because I don't want you to be surprised this time next year, like, whoa, this is coming out of left field. Folks, no, it shouldn't be.
Well, on top of that, right, like the entire Title IX process of, you know, how universities handle sexual assault, et cetera, that's totally under scrutiny from a lot of different angles. And it's a relevant topic, you know, in newspapers, et cetera. So it's no surprise that they maybe even sought this out.
Yes. I don't know that there's, I mean, you can touch on it, but I just don't think there's a lot more to say. Again, it's just Last Chance U is going to Independence for a reason. And I think Ray Buford, Dior Johnson, Tamarian Johnson are part of that reason. So if you were trying to burying, you know, that the scandal from December, January behind you, you're going to be hearing about it on a national scale come next summer.
All right, so last national docu-series will be Being PJ Fleck, which actually airs tonight on...
About 45 minutes from now, if I want to date the podcast.
Yeah, ESPNU. And then it'll actually be rebroadcast on the Big Ten Network. So if you don't have ESPNU, I believe you can catch it on Thursday evening sometime on the Big Ten Network. So basically this is like a four-part docu-series where they're going to basically follow PJ around. I'm assuming it's largely in the off season. Do you know how current it'll be?
It's from, I believe, like signing day up until the summer workouts.
Okay. So it's not even into fall camp at all.
Not that I'm aware of, but I could be wrong on that. But it's going to be covering a large part of spring ball, different kind of things in recruiting. They're going to be touching on the facilities amongst other things. So I don't know maybe the final episode is up to fall camp, but I don't believe it is.
Okay. No, interesting. That should, you'd think, actually paint the university in a pretty positive light.
Absolutely.
I've never watched any of these, the Being whoever they are. I know it's being whoever the coaches they're following, but I have to imagine it puts a pretty positive spin on being a head coach.
Yes, and from what the staff members have seen of the show, so they think it's going to paint the university in a very positive light. Again, I think the number that was told to me is that after this episode airs and all these episode airs, they're going to be replayed on ESPN, ESPN2, ESPNU, and Big Ten Network over 280 times. So again, that's only positive. Whoa. For – yes. I mean, it's going to be replayed all the freaking time. So it's a lot of times you're going to be seeing PJ Fleck episodes. So if you missed tonight's episode or you missed last night's episode, if you're listening to this in your cubicle or on your way to work, I mean, don't sweat it. It's going to be replayed a ton. So Again, it's a very positive thing for Minnesota. It's a very positive thing for Minnesota football recruiting and just the university in general.
What kind of impact do you think a show like that could even have on recruiting, at least from an exposure standpoint? I'm sure can you even measure that yourself? Like, how, do you think you'll be able to notice
a
difference?
I don't know that you can, but again, how you can measure it is, again, there's not many staffs or Big Ten staffs even across Big Ten landscape that can say, hey, check out ESPNU tonight, or another episode of Being PJ Fleck is going to be broadcast. So again, these kids can get an actual look at inside meetings, you know, inside practices. What's it like to be a Golden Gopher? And you can find it on ESPN. Again, kids are going to think that's pretty freaking cool, because again, I'm only 24 still here. So again, I think I'd like to know what a teenager is thinking more or less now and again. So again, that's just something that you can put in a positive light. If you want to see what being PJ Fleck is all about, just check it out on ESPN or ESPN2 or Big Ten Network, wherever it's airing. And again, they can keep pointing to that if these kids are complaining on social media that they're bored. Because if you don't think coaching staffs matter or monitor what kids are putting on social media, say a kid says he's bored, well, I can guarantee you some coach from somewhere is saying, hey, well, watch this clip of our university. Well, now Minnesota can point to it on ESPN, and I think kids are going to find that pretty freaking cool.
All right. Well, open practices.
Open practices between the now and the next time we talk. Friday night at 6 at Bierman Nagurski is going to be the first open practice.
That'll be the 4th of August.
Yes, the 4th of August and August 5th, a.k.a. my birthday. They have a 3:30 practice at Bierman Nagurski, and then on Tuesday, August 8th, I believe there's another 3:30 open practice. So again, if you want to check out what a PJ Fleck practice is like, if you want to see for yourself what these camp battles are going to develop into, come and check it out for yourself. And again, if you come out to one of these practices, please, I'll be the only 6'4" young 20 looking guy there. So come on up. I'd love to talk some Gopher football with you and scratch that itch.
So I think one last piece on the Saturday practice. I think I saw via the Twitter sphere that's going to be a diaper drive day. So if you're going, you're encouraged to bring diapers for families in need. So yeah, do that. Be a part of be a positive impact in the community. So I want to thank everybody for listening to the podcast. Again, you can rate and review this podcast on iTunes or whatever podcast aggregator that you use. Again, I want to thank you for listening, and go Gophers.